Happy to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Jim Packer joining me at this, our Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. And, of course, we count on you for support. You count on Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network for talk about issues that matter to you. And we do count on you to help keep these discussions going on the air. So make a gift of any amount right now. Help us pay for the programs you depend on. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And Jim, we've got some little inducements,
have we not? We do indeed, Larry. We've got a dollar-for-dollar match right now up to $2,500. This generous challenge is offered by a fan of you and the program. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio today. So your pledge right now will be doubled. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, we'll be talking to Scott Craven, our UW Extension wildlife ecologist, great friend. And I tell you, we've had so much fun with him over the years talking about wildlife. And discussions like this of wildlife and some of the other environmental things we talk about on the Ideas Net are possible because of your financial support. So please give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio today is one of the best things you can do with 3 minutes of your time. Just give us your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. Whether you call or pledge online, we'll keep all of your personal information safe. Your gift right now of $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount feels right to you, will become the stories and the programs that keep you connected to the world. That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We get great guests like Scott on WPR because they know that you're going to ask good questions and that you'll be able to get those questions in without interruption. Your support makes this program possible. You are the most reliable part of our budget, as a matter of fact. So thanks in advance. I want to thank everyone who contributed yesterday during the program. We had a wonderful turnout of people calling in with contributions. Thanks in advance for making your pledge today at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Larry, we have a goal of 75 calls for the program. The first one is in, and so now it's your opportunity to get a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,500. It's in effect right now. A great time to pledge because for every dollar you give, a fan of the program will donate an additional dollar. It's their way of encouraging you to support Larry's program. So double the buying power of your pledge right now by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Jim, you know, I noticed our first contributor was a new contributor and contributed $120. And when you pledge $120 or more, you can choose the food for $40 as your thank you gift. So that's a good deal. This thank you gift will provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. So please pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And again, thanks to everybody who's contributed so far. And Jim will be back and joining us a little later on. But right now, we've got to yak away at Scott Craven.
Let's do that.
Yeah. So what's new with you? You've got just back from California, the world traveler here.
It's been a busy winter, Larry, which is good because, I don't know, maybe as I get older, it seems like it's been a long winter. We've had persistent snow cover and ice, and I was hoping with a week in California at both a conference and visiting our son that we'd come back and, the grass would be green, and it wasn't. And so,
so the grass
anyway,
is white.
The grass is white. That's right. So, yes, I was out there for an international conference in Sacramento. It's called the Vertebrate Pest Conference, held every 2 years. But it deals with essentially the kinds of animal problems we often talk about on the radio, but from an international perspective. So there were lots of Australians and New Zealanders there. They've got
trouble.
We have nothing to deal with compared to what they've got to deal with. There was a very interesting paper, for example, on the roughly 1 million feral camels that they have running around in the outback. Not to mention that the cats and rabbits and foxes and dogs and assorted other things that all interfere with the native marsupial fauna,
yeah,
but cause all sorts of problems for people in agriculture and livestock, and who knows. But it was very interesting hearing some of those things. So there were some things of relevance to folks here, too.
Well, unfortunately, I haven't seen a feral camel lately, anyway, in Wisconsin.
It's a good thing. They're big and they're hard to deal with.
Let's give the number for you to call if you'd like to join in with a question for Scott, 1-800-642-1234, if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment. Or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. Scott, I know there are some things in play and happening on the deer front, and let's take a look at that. There's some research and so forth.
Well, of course, there's still a fair bit of anxiety, although the dust has settled a bit. There's still a lot of anxiety over the way the deer season played out last fall, with a dramatic reduction in the harvest and some other issues. And things have been kind of quiet on that front leading up to the meetings, which will be coming up fairly soon around the state, reviewing deer population goals for the many deer management units. And for people who remain concerned or want to have their voice heard, going to those public forums is a good thing to do. But in addition, there's another fortuitous occurrence, and that is that, as you well know, when people buy sporting arms and ammunition, there's a federal tax that goes to the Pittman-Robertson Fund. It was a very farsighted thing to do many years ago, because that 11% excise tax on arms and ammunition comes back to the states. It's collected by the federal government, but it comes back to the states on a prorated basis to support the shooting sports, wildlife research, ranges, things like that. Well, anyway, for a variety of reasons at the national or international level, as you know, there's been a lot of let's just say stockpiling of ammunition and things like that. So expenses or purchases have gone through the roof in the last year or two. And as a result, the amount of money available for Wisconsin, for example, is much higher than it's ever been before. And I think a very good, sound decision has been made that the bulk of that bonus, essentially, is going to be plugged into research on deer. They're a tremendously important and powerful species in the state. So they're talking about funding a variety of things that have kind of been on the back burner for lack of resources for many years. And these include implementing some of the recommendations to strengthen the so-called sex-age kill method of determining deer populations. They're talking about an evaluation of an alternative deer population estimation technique that they call distance sampling, which uses aircraft, which may provide more of an easy-to-understand, forthright estimation of the deer population as opposed to the mathematical modeling of sex-age kill, which people are just suspicious of because they don't know all the ins and outs of it. But in any event, that plus some research on buck harvest rates, which are an important component of the estimation. A lot of people are concerned about the impacts of the large bear population, numbers of coyotes, and of course wolves on fawn mortality. So they're going to be doing some predation studies. Anyway, this bonus of funding that's available in otherwise economic hard times.
Good deal
should
for
really,
us.
Great deal for us, and it should really help with the deer management program in years to come.
Lots of callers online to visit with you, so let's take a call. Kevin in Platteville first. Hi, Kevin. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Unusual situation about a year ago. You know, we had this washouts with highways, with rains and that.
Mm-hmm.
And Highway 33 near Portage, Wisconsin, it was a bright sunny day looking down, watching the rapids flow across where there used to be a road. And this about a 14-inch carp, I saw it down there, and it looked just about so green, almost as green as though some little kid had colored it with a crayon.
Mm-hmm.
And is that anything that's unusual or... My guess is maybe this thing was trapped in a pond eating algae all its life, but any possible explanation for that?
Well, in some cases, diet can change animal coloration, so that's a possible explanation. It may have actually been covered in some way with an algae film or something, too, depending on where it was during those floodwaters. Those, I guess, are probably the most likely explanations, but that it's interesting you bring this up because I had a call just before I left for California from a person, it was over toward Milwaukee, who had seen a bright green squirrel.
Ah.
And that really caused a little consternation as to what was going on there. But nevertheless, I think the explanation as far as the carpet's concerned, diet, algae, or something else, that's not an animal. Not an animal that
is normally green.
Is normally green, but might also have some human involvement of coloring it or whatnot, especially in hard times like flooding. So,
yeah. All right. Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate the call. Carl in Door County, we're on to you. Hi, Carl. Carl, are you there? I guess we don't have Carl. Let's go to Patricia in Portage. Hi, Patricia.
Hey. I would like for you guys to talk about the most important election in the state that's coming up April 12th in every county in Wisconsin that is about deciding what happens in nature and wildlife issues in our state. It's been around for 75 years. But only hunters and trappers know about it. And it is not under Wisconsin election law. The candidates don't debate before the election to keep it privatized. And all of the delegates are from the Rod and Gun Clubs about killing wildlife when we actually have 2.3 million wildlife watchers in Wisconsin who bring 11 times as much revenue to state and local tax coffers and have never been heard from on nature and wildlife issues in our state because they don't know about this election.
All right, Scott.
The caller is referring to is the Conservation Congress spring hearings that we usually talk about every year. This program, and you reach a lot of people, so that's one thing that's being done. The Congress hearings are well publicized, and in anything related to the DNR or anyone going to the DNR webpage, they can certainly access the hearings pamphlet, which lists all of the advisory questions that are up. And I guess I would disagree that folks who are not necessarily hunters, fishers, or trappers are not heard. I think virtually everything that occurs in the state now and in recent years usually is vetted to a variety of stakeholder groups well beyond the traditional, as they said, hook and bullet crowd. In addition, over the past couple of it's probably been 4 or 5 years now, but as far as the Conservation Congress history is concerned, when issues have come up that are hot-button issues, and you may remember probably the hottest hot-button issue of all was the proposal for a mourning dove hunting season that came before the Congress. I mean, the meetings were just packed with people on both sides of that issue. And then there was the issue dealing with feral cats a couple of years ago that attracted a lot of attention. So in some cases, there are issues that affect a broad base of people, and the people do seem to come out. In other cases, you know, if the discussion is about whether the muskie size limit should be 36 or 38 inches in such and such a lake, chances are the people interested in that are the muskie fishermen, period. So it's not surprising that the parties that have a vested interest in these changes and advisory questions are the ones that tend to come out. You know, public involvement is always a challenge. It doesn't. It's not just in wildlife conservation issues. It's any number of things. If you look at the way the primary elections for political office are, you know, what kind of turnout do we get for some of those? If it's in the single digits or not a whole lot more than that. So it's an uphill battle to get the public involved unless it's a real hot button issue. But certainly, the Conservation Congress spring hearing is available to anyone to attend. There's a meeting in every county of the state. They're all on the same, usually a Monday evening. I think it is April 12th this year. And you can take a look at what's going to be discussed prior to the meeting and then go and vote as you see fit.
At the what is being discussed, I believe, is on the DNR website.
Yes.
Yeah. So you go to the DNR website, take a look at what's being discussed. And
there's a long series of advisory questions, and then this is advisory to the Natural Resources Board. Some of the questions are put forth by the Congress themselves. The delegates the caller referred to are elected in each county, and then there are committees within the Congress, a big game committee and a fish committee and so forth.
Right.
They can bring questions forth. The DNR can put questions forth, and I think there's a mechanism for public involvement there as well. So anyway, there you have it. Anybody who's interested can certainly go.
Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join in, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 as we talk wildlife issues with Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist. Carl in Door County, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Carl.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
Scott, we have a lot of pygmy shrews in the Shivering Sands area. Is the pygmy shrew the smallest mammal in Wisconsin?
Well, there are a couple of small shrews. There's the so-called least shrew or little short-tailed shrew, which is a southern Wisconsin prairie species, not one you'd see in Door County. And then the pygmy shrew is actually the same size as the long-tailed shrew. We're talking about animals here that are barely the size of your little finger and then have a tail like a toothpick. So they are very small things. The only way you can tell the pygmy shrew from the long-tailed shrew, which is quite common, they're both fairly common, is to look at their teeth. And there's a characteristic of the teeth in their cheek in terms of how many cusps they have. This is not something don't do this at home, folks. But you can look for someone who knows their shrews. They would look at the dentition of these little guys and determine whether it's a pygmy shrew or a long-tailed or cinereous shrew. There's a lot of names for these things. But I would say that probably the tiniest one overall by a hair is Cryptotis, the least shrew or little short-tailed shrew found in the southern part of the state. But, I mean, these are very tiny animals.
Okay.
Even more so than probably the next runner-up would be the Pipistrelle or Perimyotis bat, which is also very tiny.
There you have it, Carl. Thanks a lot for calling. And Rusty in Springstead, let's turn to you now. Hi, Rusty.
Hello. Got a couple of questions for Scott this morning.
Okay.
The first one is on falconry. I'd love to get interested in it. I usually have a couple pairs of gray horned owls that nest close to where I live, and I know you have to have a falconry license in order to be able to take a chick and raise it. And just wondering where you'd go to learn how to do that. I know you have to get a license. I'm sure there's an extensive amount of classes you have to take. I would imagine. I never really talked to anybody about getting a falconry license. And also the other question I've got for Scott is if he has seen the latest National Geographic magazine, there's a wolf on the cover.
Yes.
And there's a huge article in there about the big controversy with the environmentalists and the hunters out west in Montana, Idaho, and Yellowstone area about the hunting, the first hunt for wolves out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On that, if ever you have any kind of...
Okay.
Well, first of all, I was going to ask Rusty where he was in Spring. We have a place on Springstead Road, as you know, Larry.
Yes.
But anyway, on the falconry front, it is a fascinating hobby. It's not something I've done in terms of having my own birds, but I've hunted with falconers a couple of times. It's pretty cool. And... But a great horned owl is not a great choice. In fact, owls in general are not often hunted with because they're primarily nocturnal hunters.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of hard to see what's going on. So the various hawks are more preferred. I think what normally happens here is that one like Rusty who has an interest kind of finds a falconer and becomes an apprentice, so to speak, and that's the best way to learn. But from Rusty's perspective, the first thing I'd recommend, since he's there in Price County, head over to Park Falls and talk to the folks at the DNR Service Center and see what the necessary permitting and so forth is. And since these folks are licensed, they could probably hook him up with somebody in the local area that he could then learn from. falconry.com. And secondly, I'm guessing if you Google falconry, you'll have several long evenings of reading to get caught up on. But it is all permitted, and in order to take a bird from the wild, I think you need to have the necessary training and so forth first. So he's right on that account.
National Geographic. I just got my copy, and I saw the wolf on the cover, but I haven't gotten into reading it yet.
Nor have I, but certainly we don't have a monopoly on controversy when it comes to wolves here in the northern part of the Midwest. It's a lot more contentious in the western states, where they have been hunting this year for the first time and a number of wolves have been taken. But as said, there's a good reference for people who want to get up on the latest in that particular issue. Recent National Geographic, I'll have a look at it myself.
All right. Thanks, Rusty, for calling. Appreciate it. Fred in Sheboygan, we're on to you now. Hi, Fred.
Good morning.
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 Nice to hear your program. I don't get to listen often. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My call is about two things, and I spend a lot of time in the fall in the woods as a bow hunter, and several days, actually, in a row sometimes. And the wolves are part of it. And I'd like to know why we can't, in Wisconsin, harvest wolves.
Okay. And should we take that part of it first, Larry, and come back? Or what's the second part?
Yeah.
The second thing that I just wanted listeners to hear is that back in the 1940s, when the Pittenham Law was enacted,
right? Yeah.
That was a voluntary law proposed by Fred Bear,
mm-hmm.
the originator of bow hunting, so to speak, in the United States. And I am always curious about that tax money, the money from hunting and fishing licenses that are generated in our beautiful state. Is all of that money used for hunting and fishing and surveys and studies about hunting and fishing, or is some of it funneled off for other projects?
Okay.
Well, let's deal with the wolf harvest first. As you know, the wolf situation is wolves have a long history in Wisconsin, but their current success in terms of the numbers of animals that I think really exceed people's expectations is still a fairly new phenomenon, the last decade or two. Part of the wolf management plan includes exploring the possibility for a legal harvest of wolves at a certain point in their population. So those discussions have been and are taking place, but that's a very controversial issue. And whether it will ever come to fruition or not, I don't know. But it is a possibility, Fred. So, you know, hold fire on that. It could happen someday. As far as the money from either Pittman-Robertson or the equivalent fisheries tax, which is called the Dingell-Johnson bill, yeah. The vast majority of those monies go right back into the kinds of things we described earlier, shooting ranges, the shooting sports, wildlife research, and the necessary infrastructure to support those in terms of personnel and so forth. So, yes, hunters and fishers, if you can call a tax voluntary. I mean, early on, hunters and fishers were credited with being the people who pushed that law into place, you know, and now most people don't even think about it. It's part of the cost of doing business. But it is a tremendously important source of revenue. So,
thanks very much for calling, Fred. Appreciate your call. Well, we're in the midst of our Wisconsin Public Radio winter membership drive. Larry Mueller here with Jim Packard joining us, and of course you've joined us a while back, maybe when at the start of this program, and as a regular listener to this program, you know you're always going to hear something worthwhile, and today we're asking you to put a value on this program. Your contribution is vital to Wisconsin Public Radio. It's a big part of what keeps us going, so I hope you'll support this program and everything else you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio by making a gift. Any amount at WPR.org or at 888 202-2552. And Jim Packard, we have a matching deal, too.
We do indeed, Larry. We have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,500, which is in effect right now. It's offered by a fan of the show. Your gift of $50 will turn into $100. $100 turns into $200. You get the idea. So take advantage of the match. Give Wisconsin Public Radio even more money to pay for programs like this one. Get your pledged match dollar-for-dollar right now. We started with a goal of 75 calls for the program. We're down to 65, so we're making some progress, and we can really do that when you give as generously as you can at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And, you know, we don't usually give our opinions on the air, but when we talk about Wisconsin Public Radio, I like to make an exception to that a little bit. We're not afraid to say that we think WPR is a unique radio service. It's a service well worthy of your support. Jane from Pickett says she can always count on WPR to be there anytime she wants, in the car or at home. She says, what a luxury we have. Take a moment to voice your opinion right now by making a pledge of support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Larry, we know there are many reasons why Wisconsin Public Radio listeners become Wisconsin Public Radio contributors. One of the main reasons is that they want to make a difference. Giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is one way to make a difference and help your local community. Your new membership today not only pays for the programs you listen to, it gives other people in your neighborhood the chance to discover WPR. So make that difference. Give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And I think we have a reputation at WPR for quality and substance. Your contributions in the past have gotten us up to this point, as a matter of fact, and your pledge today will make this kind of strength go on into the future. Your dollars give Wisconsin Public Radio the means to keep quality and substance in our programming every day. So pledge right now. Pledge your support securely at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And Jim, they can pay a lot of different ways.
That's true. They can go to monthly installments, quarterly. It makes things easier on your budget that way. A $60 pledge becomes $5 a month. A $120 pledge is $10 a month, and so on. And if you call now, why, your contribution will be doubled
in this
matching grant up to $2,500. So installments are easy to set up, and you can do that at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And, you know, if you pledge $120 or when you pledge $120 or more, for one thing, it's going to be matched. So it's going to turn into $120 pledge turns into a $240 pledge. But when you pledge $120 or more, you can choose the Food for 40 as your thank you gift. It's a thank you gift that's going to provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. Pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Do it right now. Thanks to everybody who's already contributed. And if you haven't done it yet, please do it sometime during this show. It's a vote for Scott Craven and all of the good programs, the other good guests that we have here on the IdeasNet. And we have callers online to visit with Scott. And certainly if you want to join in, I hope you do. Give us a call. Stephen Appleton's up next. Let's turn to Steve. Steve, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. Thank you very much. Say, I was out shed antler hunting last weekend. And I had some luck, but I came upon a group of deer, and there was a buck that still had his antlers, and he was with those.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was, you know, going along well-traveled deer trails, and I would come upon spots of blood along the trail. And I was wondering, are the does still in estrus, and do bucks bleed when they lose their antlers?
Well, first of all, Steve, one of the things that when we were talking about deer earlier, I was going to mention was that on the way to Mount Horeb last night, we had to stop to let a couple deer cross the road we live on in the town of Oregon. And as I looked to the left, the two joined nine other ones that were standing there in a field. And lo and behold, as we passed, one lifted its head. I said, holy mackerel, there's a buck. And it still did have one beam. It had lost one, but still had one. So, you know, considering they start dropping them back sometimes even before Christmas, to hold them on into March does happen, but there aren't many left carrying antlers. And when they are shed, There is sometimes a little bit of skin or tissue damage there that might cause a little bit of blood in the trail, and it doesn't take, as you know from being in the woods, a whole lot of blood on snow, especially when it's melting, to look a lot more gruesome than it really is. So I think that's probably that, or an animal that injures a hoof or whatnot in the ice and snow. That happens a lot, as it does with my Labrador retrievers. So I think those are the most likely explanations there.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot for calling. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 with your question, or email at talk@wpr.org. On to Tom in Columbus. Hi, Tom.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and happy, hopeful, soon spring to all of you.
Yes, as well.
We are contributors, and we do appreciate the program, and my family has always been ardent supporters through good and bad times of the DNR.
I had occasion
to spend an overnight in Park Falls last week, and my wife and I are avid grouse hunters. We hunt quite a bit more towards the Ladysmith-Tony area, and commented to the gentleman who was loading my semi that we'd always wanted to get over to the, rough grouse capital of the world, Park Falls, and hunt. Mm-hmm. And he said he made indication to not bring the dog. And I said, excuse me? And he said, well, my brother, and not to belabor the wolf point again, mm-hmm. because I think they have a vital part of, in our ecosystem. But according to him, he had a brother that lost a dog to a wolf the previous season, and an association with another individual that lost one the season before. I can't believe that they're at the point where, we wouldn't be more likely to be hit by lightning than to have, our beloved Weimaraner get taken by a wolf. Are these concerns legitimate? And I guess what if, we would happen to have such an encounter would be the best way to approach it? And, you guys are the best, and I'll take my response off the air.
Thank you very much for calling, Tom.
Well, yes, Tom, and I'll second that spring thought. I'm really looking forward to spring, and I've been paying careful attention to our phenology list on the wall in the office just to see some hopeful signs. We can talk about that later. The wolf and dog issue is one of the many things that go into the stew that make wolves in the Northwoods so contentious. Certainly, there have been, depending on your point of view, a lot or a few cases in recent years where wolves have killed dogs, in the teens or low 20s, whether that, considering the number of people who live there, the number of pet dogs, the number of people hunting and so forth, is highly significant or whether it isn't, depends on your point of view. But I can assure you, if it's your dog, it's highly significant, or if you know someone. So, yes, dogs are killed. A second point that qualifies that is that most of the dogs that are killed are trailing dogs, hounds, bear hounds and the like, that are running over long distances and may cross through a wolf territory or are more likely to come in contact with wolves and are not necessarily in the close association with their owners or handlers. There have been a few cases of others, be it pets or other hunting dogs, but in terms of there's a compensation plan in place for that, but that's of little consequence to someone who's lost their cherished pet or longtime hunting companion. That's just the way it is. The DNR goes to considerable lengths to warn people about the hazards, to post areas that where there's a known particularly aggressive pack or where dog kills have taken place. So those would certainly be places you might want to avoid. And if you were contemplating going up in that area hunting, I'm sure there at the Park Falls Service Center, you can find out where those posted areas or warning areas are. And then finally, in terms of the response, should you come upon that situation, I guess that's sort of one of those things that...
I know what I'd do. I'd probably take a shot right straight up in the air with my gun.
Well, I mean, that would be the first thing. Obviously, if you're hunting, you have a firearm, and hopefully, the commotion, the noise you might make by firing a warning shot or two would end the situation. If the situation persists at that point and that's really becomes a personal decision of what you're going to deal with. But in addition to the posted areas and the advice on where to be or not be, they also have a series of guidelines about how to deal with wolves or how to live in wolf country, as well as the bear situation. So I think if you're contemplating spending some time there or if you have a place there, anybody should take a little time to go through those steps.
All right. Thanks very much for calling, Tom. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Diana in Blair. Hi, Diana. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I just wanted to echo the one lady's comment. I have attended conservation congresses in the past, and I've known people who have been on the board. And non-hunters are not welcome at the Congress, and I'll listen on air. Thank you.
All right. Well,
What can I say? This is a case where traditionally the group has been dominated by the people who are concerned about the issues before them. And generally speaking, well, I'm trying to think of some example here. Wildlife conservation issues that might be of more concern to the average homeowner or let's say, for example, there was a proposal to limit the amount of sunflower seed you could put out in your backyard to feed the birds at any one time, or you could only have one bird feeder instead of two. Those kinds of things, well, A, they wouldn't come up at all, but the point is those are not the kinds of things that would likely come before the Conservation Congress. They tend to deal with more issues that are of concern to consumptive users, hunters, fishers, trappers, and so forth. Sometimes not, but usually so. So with that group there, I would be how do I want to word this? I can certainly imagine an opposite situation where, let's say, for example, there was a meeting of the local PETA chapter that someone showing up there to share venison recipes would probably not feel particularly welcome either. So I guess what I'm suggesting is that the tide flows in and out. But the Conservation Congress is open to everybody. That's not an issue for debate. How welcome people feel or how long it takes to make inroads with your particular point of view is really no different than the way the healthcare debate or anything else is transpiring in Congress or any other level of any organization that takes public input. Don't know what to tell you beyond that.
Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Scott Craven, our guest. We'll take some emails now. Scott, Elizabeth emails, says, I have five turkeys who get on my deck and on my roof and make a mess. The male chases people and are pesky. How do I get rid of them, and how long do they hang around?
Well, especially, did the caller say where they were? Where are they?
No, we do not have. Well, I don't have that.
In any event, around areas, particularly in urban settings where there might be a park or whatnot, turkeys have become unusually habituated to people. They will roost on rooftops. It's a nice, flat, level surface, out of harm's way, probably more comfortable than a tree limb, and that does happen. But the notion of the gobbler being aggressive and around should change somewhat here in the next few weeks as the breeding season comes online and the hens have gone off to do their thing in terms of nesting and the gobblers are off displaying and dealing with that whole situation. So with any luck, the problem will resolve itself. Now, that doesn't mean it won't recur later on in the season when all this breeding activity is over with. However, turkeys are pretty generally wary and intelligent, and if the homeowner in that case takes some steps to make them feel unwelcome on the roof, which would mean some persistent harassment when they show up there in the evening to roost, and that could be, you know, noisemakers, hook up the garden hose and spray them, whatever you can think of to make them feel uncomfortable, they'll find another roost or another place to occupy. If there's a particular, if they're right on the ridgeline, for example, there are various bird control devices that are used for pigeons and other species, kind of spiky. It's a strip with sharp spikes on it that could be run down the ridgeline, making it unavailable for roosting. There could be other tactics like that as well, but I think the main thing is to just give those turkeys a sense that not a good place, guys. You're not welcome here.
Gary in Rhinelander emailed, and I'm wondering if Scott has any information on the 2009 Wisconsin bear harvest totals. The DNR website has no information, and I've seen nothing published anywhere. By this time, I would have thought the numbers would be public. Any information you could share?
And I thought sometime a week or two ago I had seen those numbers, that the harvest was way up because, of course, after the population study that indicated there were a lot more bears than we thought there were, they took steps in 2009 to dramatically increase the permits, and they've done the same thing again for the 2010 permit levels. So it was expected that the harvest would go up dramatically, and I'm pretty sure it did, and I thought I'd seen those numbers, but I don't have them in front of me here, but they should be on the website. Maybe a little more digging on the website. Yeah, in the absence of the website, then either a call to the central office here in Madison and talk to the big game ecologist, or a call to any one of the service centers or DNR offices around the state. That shouldn't be a hard number to come by, Larry.
And then Tim and Rhinelander, he thinks the study, the DNR study you were talking about earlier, is going to turn out to be maybe a waste of time. He's already heard politicians and others complaining that a third party will not be conducting the research. And a body of experts across the nation from Canada just finished a review of the deer management program and determined it to be the most transparent, and their method of estimating the deer herd to be the best in the country. He thinks the Wisconsin deer hunter has lost their way. Hunters have lost their way, and there isn't a GPS unit made that will help them find their way back.
Well, there are certainly folks who feel that that the program, despite the criticism and the anxiety over, gee, it didn't see very many deer last year, all those things that we've heard about for the past couple months, there are still folks, including the audit panel, that have validated and vindicated the program repeatedly. So there are some supporters out there. Tim apparently is one of them. And even though the program and the tools for assessing the population may have been rated the best or near the top or whatever, that doesn't mean there's not room for improvement. So I think the kinds of information and the data that they hope to collect with these new research programs will only make a good program that much better.
Yeah, we can only hope. That's for sure. And I can only hope that you will help us out with our Wisconsin Public Radio winter membership drive. Jim Packer joining me again. And our goal is to keep bringing you discussions with folks like Scott Craven. We do that in large part with listener contribution. Your gift, any amount right now, makes a big difference in how we are able to function and as we raise money to pay for these discussions that you rely on. So I hope you'll give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And we still have some dollar match monies available.
Indeed, Larry. We've got a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,500 available right now. So far, $2,115 is in, so your pledge will be doubled if you call us right now. A great time to pledge, because for every dollar that you give, a fan of the program, of Larry's, will donate an additional dollar. It's their way of encouraging you to support the program. So double the buying power of your pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You might wonder what our pledges go for, and I say are because I pledge as well, and Jim Packard pledges. We all pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, we have toll-free numbers, so you can call in with your questions. We rely on newspapers and magazine subscriptions, the internet, so that we can research the topics of the day. All of those things, and of course, a whole lot more, have costs associated with them. And your pledge at WPR.org or at 888 202-2552 helps pay for those.
Giving at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is really easy. All it takes is a gift of a dollar or two a week, a few minutes of your time. That would add up to about $50 or $100 for the year, and all year long you'll benefit from the program and all of the WPR programs that you enjoy. So make your contribution at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
Here's something else.
I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio because it's one of the best mixes that I can find of both highly entertaining and highly useful and informative information. Wisconsin Public Radio really has a great variety in the type of programs they put on. It's very difficult to get bored of listening to WPR. I only used to listen to public radio in the car. I've recently started listening to public radio on online streaming. The variety and quality of the broadcasts are really enough to keep someone, you know, tuning back in for more time and time again. I'm Ben Martin from Minnesota, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for variety and entertainment.
Even Minnesota folks, even Ben from Minnesota is a contributor to Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you can become one as well. WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You know, we have Larry enjoys grilling and chilling with Mad Dog and Merrill, the galloping grillers.
Grillers.
And Jim, they're going to be doing a great job for us.
That's right. On the 19th of June, in the afternoon, as you enjoy yourself, Mad Dog and Merrill will be cooking up a tasty feast on the grill, including chicken, salmon, brats, summer sausage, and veggies. All of those will be available, and you'll have a great time. $1,200 contribution gets you a pair of tickets to that event. And, Larry, I would imagine that there are still a couple of tickets left.
There are just, actually, we've been going through them pretty fast. There are only 11 tickets left.
Okay.
So there's not a lot left. So if you've been thinking about it, now would be the time to act. Would be my guess here.
So your gift of $50 turns into $100 if you call us right now, because we have a fan of the program who's offering a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,500. So take advantage. Get your pledge match dollar-for-dollar right now. Give as generously as you can at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We hope that here that we keep you informed and entertained every day. You get a lot of value from this program, I'm sure, plus Kathleen Dunn's program or Chapter a Day or What Do You Know. These are all great programs that you may have come to rely on. Wisconsin Public Radio gives you a window on the world. I don't think there's any window to compare to it. So I hope you'll support the exciting mix of programs you enjoy on this station with your contributions. When you contribute, you're going to feel great. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Maybe you've been listening to WPR for many years. Maybe you remember Pops Gordon and people like that. If you can, share your appreciation of the lifelong learning that you get from WPR by making a gift of $1,000. Your gift of $1,000 is about $83 a month. It helps make WPR available to everyone. So give any amount right now, WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And I think about the kinds of programs that we offer. Wednesdays, usually, on this 11 to 12:30 hour, we talk about the outdoors and the environment. Scott Craven's a great example of that. Fridays, we have our Garden Talk program. Thursdays, we often have programs dealing with home repair and maintenance. We also have programs, regular shows, dealing with health and fitness. And we have, I think, a variety of authors, both state authors and national authors, to come in as well. This is a valuable service, I think a service worth supporting. I support it with my dollars. I hope you will as well. Your contribution, whatever amount you choose, makes the programs possible. And if you haven't pledged yet, please do it now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Make a habit of donating to Wisconsin Public Radio. Pledge your support right now and renew that support each year. It is a good habit and a habit you can be proud of. So get it all started today with your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or at 888 202 2552.
And we've already had about 20 people call in with contributions. Thanks to those of you who renew by mail as well or by making the ongoing monthly transfers from your bank account. If you renew and monthly sustainers, really those who renew and the monthly sustainers are really the backbone of our funding. And if that's you, thank you very much. If you haven't given yet, though, join the other wonderful WPR members by donating at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 as we get closer to the top of the hour here.
That's right. And Larry, I believe that $2,500 is in, so that'll be the matching funds for people who've contributed so far this morning. And we have a goal of 75 calls for the program, 20 people in, 55 to go. So why not make your pledge right now? If you pledge $120 or more, you can choose the Food for 40 as your thank you gift. And this gift will provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. Pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Make a habit of donating to Wisconsin Public Radio. So pledge your support today. Pledge your support. Renew your support every year. It's a good habit, a habit that you can be proud of. You can get started today with your pledge, any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Don't forget, if you want to attend the Grillin' and Chillin' with the Mad Dog and Merrill, the Galloping Grillers, that's a $1,200 contribution for two tickets, I should mention.
Mm-hmm.
Or $600 for one ticket.
And we've got 11 left, so somebody's coming alone.
Somebody's coming. Yeah, there are a few. I know there are a few people who are coming on their own this year. I think at least three that are coming on their own. So that's okay. We're glad to have everybody. But I tell you what, maybe you can't afford $1,200, or maybe you can't afford $120. Maybe you can afford $25 or $35 or $50, whatever amount you can afford. That is the correct amount for you to give to us today. I'm going to give that number once more. Scott will be back with us, and we'll be talking with him after our news break today. But here's that number right now to call, 888-202-2552, or go online, WPR.org, whichever way. Make your contribution right now. Glad to have you listening in here on the Ideas Net as we talk wildlife with Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, Larry Mueller here, and Matt in Cross Plains been waiting a while, so we'll go to Matt right away and see what's on his mind. Hi, Matt.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Appreciate the show today.
Thank you.
I know that the Conservation Congress was brought up earlier and that sort of thing. I really don't want to go there, but at least I was introduced to the DNR in Wisconsin by that experience at the Spring Congress. And met later with Senator Risser, Senator Miller's aide, about possibilities of funding differently other than basically the fee-based support of the DNR, or at least most of it, and licenses, fishing license, hunting license, so forth, does a lot of their support. And I understand you take care of those who feed you.
right.
But we had proposed, and at the time it was, maybe it wasn't organized enough, maybe it wasn't thought through enough, but that a tax basically for those who would view wildlife, those who would come in for photographic purposes, because conservation is not just about wildlife, it's about the land, the Black Earth watershed is a big deal down here, and I've seen the DNR represented there as well with the fishing and so forth. But what has this been brought up by other people? I mean, I would definitely like to see a fee, if you will, that can support people coming into the state, support people here who want to keep their land closed and let the deer walk across, people who want to see the birds come in, who want to have protection for wildlife, if you will, not just conservation being termed now basically as it is, a way to provide it for hunters.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Well, you're absolutely right, and lots of other people feel the same way, and there have been many initiatives over the years to try and balance the funding source a bit. The Endangered Resources Fund, the voluntary checkoff on one's state income tax return, is an example of something that was instituted many years ago to provide a funding stream that was not coming from hunting, fishing, trapping, that kind of thing, that as you described. But it, while it's been very successful and many millions of dollars have been generated, it is entirely voluntary, and that doesn't reach everyone. At the national level, there was a program that was lobbied for very extensively that was referred to as Teeming with Wildlife that would have dealt with taxes on binoculars and bird seed and the kinds of things that people use in their interactions with wildlife that aren't related to hunting, trapping, and so on. But that was, you know, in these days, anything that can even be remotely construed as another tax it has a very steep uphill battle. So those things have been very difficult to get implemented. Personally, you know, I think wildlife and all of our natural resources in the state contribute enormously to our quality of life in Wisconsin, to everyone's quality of life. You don't have to be a hunter to enjoy what you see on the roadside as you're driving along, or the kinds of things you see and hear on your vacation in the Northwoods, listening to loons yodeling or seeing eagles flying around. We all benefit from that kind of thing. So from that standpoint, you know, I think there should be a larger contribution, which is GPR funding, to the groups that help conserve and protect those resources that make our life better in Wisconsin. But that's a tough sell, too. So the reality, for better or for worse, is that funding streams like the Pittman-Robertson monies that we talked about and license sales and so forth have historically been the major contributors. And as you say, you dance with the one who brung you to the dance. So money does go back perhaps disproportionately into supporting those particular interests. But with the Endangered Resources Fund and other initiatives, the pendulum has swung a little bit, but it certainly has a long way to go. So you're right.
Thank you very much for calling. We had an email from Paul Holton at the DNR relating to the bear harvest. They did send out a news release on February 2nd, but he says they had more than 32,000 hunters apply for the 7,310 permits that were issued in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And that season resulted in a record harvest of 3,907 bears based on preliminary harvest numbers. It's still preliminary. It won't have the final until the 2009 big game report is published this spring. So we had that.
So just under 4,000 bears, and that vindicates me. I wasn't dreaming that I'd seen a press release. So there
no,
we go.
No, you were not.
Okay.
You were not dreaming. Let's go to Ron in Sparta. Ron, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I get a little tired of these whiners that are complaining about the deer herd. I've lived in Wisconsin, my residence, for 60 years. I've hunted here for 48 of those 60 years. I hunted back in the 50s and 60s when you had to go to Jackson County, northern Jackson County, to even see a deer. And there were wolves there then. So explain why there were wolves and there were deer there, too, if the wolves are doing so much damage. I think DNR is finally getting the deer herd under control with their management. Not only them, but the adverse winters have caused a substantial drop in the deer herd. And I think even a longtime residents, I think that's great. The hunters have to work a little bit to achieve a deer. I just drove through my valley here, and there were 20 of them standing out in the field grazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm... real skeptical and really upset with these. I think we've got a lot bigger legislative battles in our state than the deer population, and I thank you for taking my information.
Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks, Ron. I mean, you're right. What has happened over the last decade or two that deer hunters found it very easy to get used to the upside, kind of like all those years that the stock market was almost a given that you were going to make 10 or 15%. It's easy to get complacent and think that that's the status quo. But when it starts to slide the other way, as the stock market has in the past couple of years, and as the deer herd apparently did last fall, all of a sudden that's a very painful experience for some folks. But when all is said and done, and you stop and think about the situation and how good we still have it, even with the deer herd starting to get back to, as you suggested, the goal that we've been trying to get to for a long time, if that is in fact the new reality, then hunters will adjust. And the fact of the matter is, we're still harvesting several times the deer that we used to harvest back in the 60s and 70s, in the time that you talked about, when they weren't widely distributed and heavily distributed all around the state. So we'll see where it all plays out, but it's human nature to feel a little pain when things aren't going quite the way that you've gotten used to.
Scott, we were going to talk about phenology. We had an email that relates to that, and I thought I'd get that in next. Carol says, thanks for the great show again. I'm happy to report that we heard and saw the first crane flying over, checking everything out here in Randolph and Dodge County. We're outside every day, so I feel confident this is indeed the first. We look at our records from last year, and this was the first day of the crane's arrival last year as well. So it came on the same day. We'll now begin to watch for the flocks and the anticipated season of spring.
Well, that's great news. As I had on my notes, I looked at our phenology list at the office before I came over, and no redwings or cranes had been reported, but now we have them. It's just like the swallows coming back to Capistrano. But, you know, cardinals have been singing. People have reported turkeys starting to display. Geese are back. This morning's entry was a chipmunk out and about, so that was a good sign. But the breeding season is underway for some animals already. Squirrels and rabbits will be joining in soon. Things are obviously a little slower in the north. But as I watched the temperature differentials this winter, it didn't seem as bitterly cold in the north. I mean, there wasn't that great gradient between the Northwoods and down here. So our neighbors in the Northwoods may be sharing in the onset of spring at about the same time we are. So it's nice that people like the last email keep track of this, because the evidence from people watching these kinds of events is being used in the climate change debate, and it's certainly being used to make people feel better that spring is around the corner. So, good thing.
Rick and Brown Deer, we'll take a call. Your call now. Thank you for calling.
Hi. First, I'd like to say that I really enjoy your show, Scott. I always look forward to hearing you on the radio.
Thank you.
I'm an avid hunter, and I recently hooked up with some guys. We hunt in Rusk County, and I had a pretty good year this last year. I took a deer a day for 3 days.
Good.
And you talk to the locals up there, and a lot of people are really concerned about wolves and bears and predation and how it's affected the deer herd. And my concern is this, that I'm, you know, it may have decreased the deer herd in some regard, but I think more importantly than that, it's affecting the way the deer behave. And I feel that the days of just pulling alongside the road and walking 100 yards into the woods and sitting down on a tree stump and killing a deer, well, that's just not how we do it anymore. I mean, we hump significantly into the woods, get near the swamps, set up our stands near the swamps, and we're seeing a lot of deer activity there. And what I noticed this last year, particularly when I went on the antlerless control hunt, the second hunt, herd control, I in the foresty areas, wide open areas, I didn't see the tracks that I saw, the deer tracks that I would see, were deer on the move. They weren't bedding. They weren't like herding together, you know. And then we get near the swamps, and that's where we find the beds. We find a lot of deer activity. So I'm concerned that the predation isn't necessarily affecting the deer herd, but it's affecting the behavior of the animals.
Well, I suspect you're right, Rick, and I think the other thing you didn't mention that I'd throw out is that there's also a lot of concern that the magnitude of feeding and baiting that's going on has also changed deer movement patterns and behavior. So things are not, for a variety of reasons, be it predators, feeding and baiting, deer numbers, hunter behavior. You know, hunters hunt differently now, too. You know, drives aren't as much in favor as they once were. A lot of things come into play in terms of how many deer people see. And I would just say that one of the new innovations the DNR is using is this survey that takes place when you register your animals. And people are now, hunters are now able to contribute information on how many deer they saw per outing and per hour and so forth. So more information will be collected along those lines that will shed some light on this in the future.
Thanks again, Rick, for calling. Appreciate it. An email from a mother emailed in and said, just wondering if a high school student for a graded class assignment can shadow a wildlife biologist. Just wondering if that would be possible. She's from Jefferson, Waukesha County.
Well, I think the first thing to do would be to check with your school and see if there's an instructor or teacher in the school who's doing something collaboratively. A lot of the FFA instructors have wildlife classes. The various schools have environmental classes. And if they happen to be on, you know, a friendly basis or good terms, or it's the teacher's husband who happens to be the wildlife manager or vice versa, the husband's wife or what have you, then sure, anything like that is possible. But I'd go to the school first, and in the absence of that, go to the local DNR office and say, hey, offspring is very interested in this. What can we do? See what happens.
I would think that there'd be a lot of biologists, wildlife biologists, who would be happy to share experiences for a half day or whatever, a day maybe.
I think they would. I think, unfortunately, in these days, there are always, you know, liability issues and things like that. But if you can work through that, then so be it. Go for it.
Go for it.
Right, Jim?
Jim Packer joining us.
Right, Scott.
We're going for it here. We really are going for it because as I look at our screen here, I'm seeing that we're moving right along. And this, our winter membership drive, we're here to raise the money we need to pay for the programs that keep you in the know and keep you entertained. That's how we work at WPR. The people who use it help pay for it. So please go online to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to ensure the future of the programming you count on. That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Jim, what are our numbers here? How many people?
Well, we started with a goal of 75 calls for the full program. We've gotten about 29 of those in, so 46 people left to go
in
the next 10 minutes. So thanks if you've already given. If not, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And, of course, we're looking forward to being with Mad Dog and Meryl for the Joy and Larry's
Grillin' and Chillin'
event on the 19th of June. $1,200 gets you a pair of tickets to that, $600 for one. There are 11 tickets left, and you can pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
That's June 19th, a Saturday. We've had it in the past at my home. We're trying a little mystery location this year in Madison. Tell you what, we're going to have a lot of fun. And Joy and I will be there and some other folks and a lot of WPR listeners. So I tell you what, if you've been enjoying this programming, enjoying the conversations that we have with guests like Scott Craven, I hope you'll take a few minutes maybe to contribute $1,200, but maybe to contribute $50 or $100 or $120. Take some time right now to make your contribution. Put a value on the programming you enjoy every day, then make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Giving is such a simple process, either at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. We only need your name, your contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay it. You know, you can use a credit card if you can because it saves money and time. Don't worry, we will not share your personal information with any other organization. So give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We have one purpose, to serve our listeners with great radio.
I found that public radio provided a wonderful alternative to the commercial radio, and at the same time created and provided wonderful, varied programs, and much of it was of local interest, personal interest, state interest. For me, that was very important. I want that service to be available to others and to continue, and therefore I see it as my responsibility to be involved, my time, my talent, and also to support with financial support. Support Wisconsin Public Radio so that it can continue to provide in the years forward the type of programming that you're experiencing, as well as an opportunity to expand programming within the state. And it takes public support as well as government support to keep this service alive.
Here's the number to call.
And that number is 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, or go online to WPR.org. That was a great comment from that listener. John from Holcomb also has contributed and says, WPR is fabulous every day. I particularly enjoy Wednesday's discussions with the out-of-doors. Other people have mentioned Scott Craven by name, and I tell you what, he does a wonderful job. And you do a wonderful job supporting us, and I hope you can I hope you can do it again this time at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, new members are important to Wisconsin Public Radio, and we want to thank the eight new members who've signed up and pledged so far this hour. The more people who support WPR, the more stable our financial situation, the better that we're able to withstand economic ups and downs. We've gotten some occasional comments, and I've been listening to WPR since 1959, back in the days of WHA Radio, Cliff Roberts, and Ken Ost. For the last 20 years, I wake up with WERN every morning, and it's starting the day with extended family. So if you remember those voices and been listening a long time.
I remember those voices.
And if you've never given before, know that your new membership will help keep Wisconsin Public Radio the same strong, reliable service that you depend on. You decide the amount and then give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I like that little piece you just mentioned, because for a lot of people, the Ideas Network is your companion all day long. Whether you wake up with us or ride to work or errands with us or cook dinner with us or listen at home or at work, you get interesting discussions whenever you want them. We're always here, and you make that possible with your donation. Wisconsin Public Radio would not be what it is without your support. So please give now. 44 more calls we need at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, the success of the drive depends on you. And thanks if you've already given. If not, you can give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Rather than receiving a book or a CD as a thank you gift this drive, you can do something extra special. Give $120 or more and select Food for 40 as your thank you gift. WPR will pass on what we would normally spend on a book or a CD as a thank you gift, and we'll send that to a Wisconsin food bank in your area. So pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Sometimes you want to listen to WPR, but you're not near a radio, and that's okay because you can listen online from anywhere in the world. I had a show not a few weeks back where we actually got an email from somebody who was listening online from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Tomisch and I were doing a garden talk show, and here comes an email from Germany. Person was listening online. Well, that's you know, that's one of the ways that we reach listeners, and of course, that counts. That costs us money as well. And well, go to WPR.org, and while you're there, check out our information about your favorite shows or guests. We've got the Facebook pages now. I have my own Facebook page, the Larry Mueller Show. The station, the network, has its own Facebook page. And, you know, there's some expense involved with this. And it's something that we are finding to be useful, and our listeners are finding it to be useful as well. Please go online now at WPR.org, make your donation, or call 888-202-2552. Just a couple of minutes left.
That's right. And when you pledge at WPR.org, or 888-202-2552, you'll add your voice to the more than 40,000 members who support Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution of any amount joins other members' contributions to make up more than a third of our budget. We use the money to bring you great programming every day, so Make your pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I'd love to see some more new contributors. Maybe you donated a few years ago and you feel like you've done your part, but you enjoy listening to WPR year after year. We need your continued support to keep this organization strong. Has it been a while since you donated? Well, if it has, now would be a good time, and especially in the next minute and a half or so, to join now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. We'll be glad to have you back in the family. We're always happy to have new listeners, and we're always happy to have new supporters. So call us right now, 888-202-2552, or go online to WPR.org. Big thanks to Scott Craven. Still a minute to go to make your contributions during this program, so put a vote in for us, will you? 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.